Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. More than 100 million Americans don't have access to dental care or can't afford to pay for it. In an investigative report on the nation's dental health, PBS Frontline explores their struggles. Dollars and Dentists airs tonight at 10 p.m., and it looks at the U.S. dental system and why it's broken. Joining us now is Miles O'Brien. He's a science correspondent for PBS NewsHour and a regular correspondent for the PBS documentary series Frontline. Welcome to the show, Miles.
And it's a great pleasure to be with you.
To our listeners out there, are you without dental insurance and can't afford a dentist? Give us a call and tell us how you manage. 614-292-8513. So, Miles O'Brien, you begin the program that airs tonight by outlining the need. The 100 million Americans either don't have dental insurance or simply can't afford to see a dentist or can't get to a dentist.
Yes, and, you know, this is a huge gaping hole in the safety net, such as it is in this country, that really has not been addressed. You know, it's interesting. None of us really like to go to the dentist. Let's be honest about it. And I think in some respect, our distaste for all of this has reflected in an absence of debate over how to handle dental care for those among us who can least afford it. It's a huge issue. It's not just your teeth. It's not just making things look bright, white, and straight. It has a fundamental effect on our health, and an unchecked toothache can lead to an abscess, which can actually kill you. So this is an issue which needs to be addressed, because there are a lot of people out there who, when they have a toothache, what do they do? If you break a leg and you're poor and you go to an emergency room, you will get treated. If you go in with a toothache, there's not a dentist standing by generally. They'll give you antibiotics and painkillers and send you out the door and tell you to find a dentist. But where to find the dentist
that will treat you? You know, it is ironic that we're waiting for the ruling coming down from the U.S. Supreme Court on the Affordable Health Care Act, and yet dental insurance is not included in that.
Not really. It's addressed slightly. Mm-hmm. There are some provisions there for oral hygiene for kids, and a provision that would ensure there would be some level of insurance for lower middle class kids. But it's not a full frontal assault on the fundamental problem here. We're talking about a broken Medicaid system. In many states, the Medicaid reimbursements are so low and the paperwork is so onerous that dentists just do not see Medicaid kids. You know, when you're getting paid 20 cents on the dollar to fill a filling, there's not a lot of incentive for that dentist, who, after all, is in a small business running a mom and pop or mostly just a pop operation, to see a Medicaid kid. And so what has happened is, the free market being the way it is, investors on Wall Street, private equity firms, have seen an opportunity. There's a huge demand out there for affordable dental care, and these big private equity-backed corporate dental chains have entered into the fray, offering dental services for kids and adults. And what we found in our investigation is being very aggressive in treatment, to say the least. And in essence, we have found a lot of evidence that they have been treating in such a way that is far beyond the need.
And by doing so, they generate more revenue for their bottom line.
Absolutely. You know, we have seen case after case of young kids going into some of these corporate chains and getting as many as 8 stainless steel crowns on their teeth.
8-year-old, 9-year-olds. We're talking kids.
Kids, and so when you're talking about that level of dental care in one mouth in one setting, that in and of itself is a problem. But when you look at why that is happening, turns out these stainless steel crowns are the most lucrative payback for a dentist who is trying to get some Medicaid reimbursement. It's actually easier to put the crown on. It's easier, faster, cheaper, and they get a higher reimbursement. So what you have is we saw repeated cases of a firm that was putting on, in many cases, double the amount of crowns than you would see in a comparable office. And you have to ask yourself, is this about revenue?
My guest is Miles O'Brien, science correspondent for PBS NewsHour and a regular correspondent for the PBS documentary series Frontline. Frontline tonight will air Dollars and Dentists at 10 p.m. Looks at the U.S. dental system and why it's broken. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to our Facebook page. Why is it that Medicaid reimburses at these different rates for different procedures? In other words, they reimburse at a very low rate if you want to just go in and get a cleaning.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Medicaid is a state-by-state type of situation. Some states have raised the Medicaid reimbursement. The interesting unintended consequence is states like Maryland and Connecticut that have, in fact, tried to address this issue by raising Medicaid reimbursements for dentists are the ones where the corporate dental chains have come in, because that's where Medicaid reimbursement is enough for them to make a profit. So there is a bit of an unintended consequence here. But what needs to be addressed in a more holistic way is states like Florida, where Medicaid reimbursement is horrendous, and really a small fraction of the kids on Medicaid can even get to a dentist of any kind. If those rates aren't raised, it's very difficult to come up with an easy solution to allow poor kids to get proper oral hygiene. And what happens is, of course, if you don't get them while they're young, it's very difficult to walk it all back as kids grow into adults.
One of the most shocking things in the show is the idea that some 1,500 kids a year in this country have major surgery because of dental problems. Major surgery that costs tens of thousands of dollars each.
Yeah. No, we were down in Florida, in Gainesville, at the University of Florida, and didn't take us long to see a five-year-old girl come in the door, little Trinity Way. She had about five or six problem teeth, but it had gone so far down the road that she needed to be under general anesthesia. And so they put her in an operating room in order to take care of her teeth. And if these teeth had been addressed, you know, earlier, of course, this wouldn't have happened. The total bill for Trinity's session to get her teeth fixed was $18,000, paid for by the taxpayers of Florida. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize that is not a very efficient way of spending tax dollars for care. But it's, you know, if you look at the bigger picture, this is how we address care in our country in general. We tend not to spend a lot of money at the front end. We tend to deal with things when it's a crisis. In this case, we're paying for a lot of oral crises in kids' mouths.
Let's talk about some of the, I, for lack of a better word, solutions or approaches are out there. In Alaska, they permit something called dental therapists, sort of like nurse practitioners, but dental practitioners. But they don't anywhere else in the country.
Alaska and Minnesota are the two places that allow this. And there's a two-part issue here. In Alaska and Minnesota, what they have, part of the impetus for all of this is that it's very difficult to get dentists to go set up shop in remote locations on Indian reservations, whatever the case may be. It's just, you can't lure them there. And so there's a fundamental geographic access problem in some of these places. And so these states have looked at that and said, hey, do we really need to have a fully, completely trained dentist to, you know, essentially clean teeth and do a simple filling? If it's a more complicated procedure, they need to be referred. But if not, why not just have this, you know, it's kind of like a nurse midwife type of approach. Well, what has happened, though, is the dentists in other states have fought this tooth and nail because they feel, obviously, there's a turf issue here, if you will, and they feel that it somehow diminishes the dental profession overall and will lead to worse care. But the key here is that these practitioners provide access in places where there is no option whatsoever, and it is more affordable because, generally speaking, they're not at the level of education, skill, time, whatever you want that would be required for a dentist. So that's one option. Then down in Alabama, we found, we found a nonprofit entity called Sorrell Dental, which is a fascinating case study. It's big. They see about 300,000 kids a year, but it's nonprofit. The dentists are all paid salary. They get the same amount of money, whether they see one patient or 10 patients a day. And there is no, because there's no driving profit motive, you don't see these multiple crowns in one setting. You don't see this push to sell high-end dentures. You don't see this upselling pressure that you see in firms that are run with a strict profit motive and are trying to please investors on Wall Street.
And dentists in Alabama are opposed to Sorrell.
Yes, they are. Same issue. It's a turf issue. You know, the dental profession historically has been a profession that prides itself on, you know, the small operation, the dentist being the captain of his or her ship. And they don't like this idea of big firms coming in. And it's a lot like what happened to optometrists a generation ago. Mm-hmm. You look at the chains that came in and changed the way we buy eyeglasses. This is what's happening in dental care right now. It's a big shift. And dentists don't like it.
Yet, so in your research, Miles O'Brien, did you find dentists or dentist organizations that are working on reforms themselves, coming up with their own ideas about how to treat this 100 million people out there?
Well, they are, because I think they hear footsteps behind them, and there's a lot of concern that regulations are coming, and they're trying to preempt that as best they can. The short answer is that most dentists would tell you, we can rely on the good graces of all of us. In other words, charity among dentists in order to fill this gap. But, and you have lived and worked in Appalachia. I have lived and worked there. You have seen the depths of poverty there. There is not enough charity in this country to approach a problem of this magnitude. It has to be something beyond that in order to really make a dent. And it's good that dentists are saying, hey, we need to do more. We need to do more pro bono work. We need to engage in charity. We need to do mission work. But it's still not going to get that 100 million plus population that needs help now.
You mentioned early on physical risks of poor dental hygiene and living with the abscesses. You can turn into septic shock. You can die from not being treated for dental problems. But there's another societal issue involved. You profiled a young woman in the program who had to lose all of her teeth, and living without teeth in this society says something about you and dictates your life.
You know, Vanessa Nations, who is this wonderful woman who I met, and she was just a broken woman, really. You know, her life had gone into a spiral because of horrible oral disease and loss of teeth, broken off teeth. Ultimately, out of desperation, she and her mother drove 8 hours to Grundy, Virginia, from Washington, to Grundy, Virginia, where dentist in a charitable organization had set up shop and offered some free dental care. They waited in line. They basically pulled out the teeth that were hurting her the most, left her with virtually no teeth. And then because she was in the right place at the right time, through charity, she ultimately got a mouthful of teeth. But and to see her smile at the end of this hour, I defy you not to get a little misty, because it has changed her life in a very fundamental way. And up to that point, you know, she couldn't get a job. She didn't want to get married. All, you know, this whole cavalcade of things. But on top of that, she was deep into debt. I mean, every time she had a toothache, she had to go to an emergency room. They'd give her some painkillers and antibiotics, send her home, but never solving the problem, just racking up additional bills. It really put her in this terrible vortex. And so we may think of it as, oh, these are just teeth, but teeth mean a lot to us in our society for a lot of reasons. And her life was really sidetracked, and she was headed to a dark, dark place, I think, had it not been for the good graces of this charity.
Miles O'Brien, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
And it was a pleasure.
Miles O'Brien, he's a correspondent for Frontline PBS. PBS Frontline has a program tonight, explores in Dollars and Dentists, explores the struggles of the 100 million Americans who don't have access to dental care or can't afford to pay for it. It's on tonight at 10 p.m. on PBS. Continuing the program when we return with the Ohio Department of Health. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the $6 billion campaign season. We'll follow the huge money behind the wallet-busting race for 2012. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point is this afternoon from 1 until 2 here on 89.7 NPR News. 68 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a comfortable day, a high of 79 degrees. Clear skies tonight and nice temperatures overnight as well, a low of 54. Sunny on Wednesday, warming up to a high of 88, clear skies Wednesday night, a low of 65. And we could see the hottest day of the year thus far on Thursday, sunny and hot with a high of 99 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Emergency room visits for dental crises are on the rise because more than 100 million Americans lack access or can't afford to pay for proper ongoing dental care. The PBS Frontline documentary, Dollars and Dentists, airs tonight at 10 p.m. and explores this national trend and other issues. So, what's going on in Ohio? Joining us now to talk about that is Carrie Farquhar. Carrie is the Oral Health Section Administrator for the Bureau of Community Health Services in the Ohio Department of Health. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Thank you, Ann.
That means you're in charge of teeth.
Okay.
Okay. Also with us is Dr. Homa Amini. She's Chief of Pediatric Dentistry at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Carrie, we just heard about some pretty dismal trends regarding dental health among the nation's neediest adults and children. How do you measure success and failure in Ohio?
Well, in Ohio, we measure it several ways. One thing is we have the Ohio Family Health Survey, and that is one source. It's a telephone survey, random digit dial survey, and we interview several families across the state, and still, even in the last survey conducted in 2010, we find that dental care, access to dental care, is still the number one unmet health care need for children in Ohio. We have oral health indicators that we look at. Our staff go out into the schools every 5 years and look in the mouths of third graders in every county in the state of children with parental consent. And the primary indicators we look at are a history of dental caries, how many, what percentage of the children have experienced tooth decay, how many have untreated caries, and how many have received preventive dental sealants.
And what do we know about them?
When we look at those indicators, over the last 10 years, we've actually made improvements in those areas. And in a couple of those, we've hit the Healthy People 2010 objectives, which is very good. So that's the good news. The bad news is when you look at that data more closely, you see that there are disparities, that there are populations that aren't doing as well as others.
There's clusters of problems.
If you look at the Appalachian children, they are 50% more likely to have dental disease, caries, experience, untreated caries.
And to what extent is that affordability versus access? Are there enough dentists?
There aren't enough dentists in the Appalachian counties, very small numbers in those counties. So a large part of it is access, because those children, a lot of those children are in families that would qualify for Medicaid, but they just don't have providers that they can go to. And the same is true for the low-income families. Twice as many children from low-income families have toothaches or untreated caries as children from middle and upper income families. So it's not just in Appalachian counties. We find it also in the inner city areas, the more urban areas.
We also heard about for-profit corporate dental clinics that focus on low-income people, people who are eligible for Medicaid, and also people who they also focus on getting people indebting people for dental treatments and things like dentures and that sort of thing. To what extent does the Ohio Department of Health watch over those kinds of operations? What do we know about them as a state?
Yes, the Ohio Department of Health doesn't actually have any kind of regulatory responsibility. We are more of technical assistance and support. And so we do meet and talk with some programs along those lines, more school-based programs than the kinds of programs you're talking about. But really, our position is more just in making sure we do all we can to improve access to oral health care. So we're looking at implementing programs ourselves that provide access to vulnerable children.
Susan and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Susan.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say that I haven't had dental insurance since 2002, and I have tried to read, you know, whatever I could about home remedies, and it's very hard to find any information. And I know you don't have time for me to tell you, you know, what I've learned in the last 10 years, but I would say that I had a real bad toothache, and I started treating it by brushing with baking soda and flossing with hydrogen peroxide and gargling with hydrogen peroxide. And I thought for sure I was going to have to go to a dentist because I never read anything anywhere that said that, you know, if you had, which I assumed it was, you know, dental decay or something like that,
mm-hmm.
that it, you could get away with that, you know. But after 2 months, you know, even though the whole side of my face was swelling, I had headaches, everything, it's cleared up. And, you know, I don't know what to say except for that.
Let's hear from Dr. Homa Amini, Chief of Pediatric Dentistry Section at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Dr. Amini, what do you make of that? I mean, are there ways, things that people can do out there to take care of themselves? Do you recommend that?
You know, with dental infections, we take that very seriously, and body tries naturally to fight the infection. So in case of Susan, her body was strong enough to take care of it, and she was lucky that it kind of temporarily healed. But abscess and infections are dangerous, and if she's not having symptoms right now, eventually that tooth is going to cause problem. And it's something that I do recommend having it checked, because if she had facial swelling, that's not a good thing. And sometimes the body naturally tries to fight it and the infection drains, but you have a chronic draining infection over there. So check with a dentist to get it checked, make sure everything is okay, and that's my recommendation.
Right, and she doesn't have dental insurance, so that's part of the problem, and that's what we're talking about today. And you see a lot of people. By the way, Susan, thanks for your call. Thank you so much.
Okay.
That's what you deal with at the clinic at Nationwide, are people that are uninsured.
That is correct. We see everybody independent of their ability to pay. So we see Medicaid, we see no insurance, uninsured. Anyone who walks into our clinic, we take care of them. And there are some safety net clinics in Ohio that take care of low income, but again, the numbers are not enough and there is an access problem.
Are you busy?
Very busy. We have about 35,000 patient visits annually at our clinic at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and I believe we are one of the busiest clinics. We have walk-in emergencies that if you do not have an appointment, but you do have toothache pain, infection, trauma, you can walk in without an appointment. And we see about 20 patients on average every day just without an appointment walking in for various reasons. So we are extremely busy.
How much of the clinic's practice is devoted to crises versus ongoing dental maintenance?
So our on average, we see about 150 patients a day, and I would say 20 of them are crises. The rest of them are scheduled patients that come in for routine care or restorative treatment.
And they're all children?
And they're all children. We go up to age 21. Once in a while, we have a patient who has a chronic medical condition and has been a patient of hospital for other reasons, for example, cardiology or other medical conditions, and they're over age 21, and we still continue to see them because that's another group of patients that have special needs, and not many places can take care of them.
We were talking about the Frontline program that's on tonight on PBS at 10 p.m., and Miles O'Brien, the reporter, talked about cases where children have been neglected so their dental care has been neglected for so long they have to be put under a general anesthetic, and in one case $18,000 for the dental repair work that was done on this, I think she was 7 or 8 years old. Is that very common?
You know, for young children who have extensive treatment needs, and general anesthesia is an option, and it's not uncommon. Here at Children's Hospital, we have a dental surgery center, and we treat kids under age 5, 2, 3, 4-year-olds that have a mouthful of decay, and it's just a humane way to treat them is put them under general anesthesia to take care of dental needs. Our cost is much lower as compared to national averages, but it is a service that is required at some cases.
My guests are Dr. Homa Amini. She's chief of the pediatric dentistry section at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Also with us is Carrie Farquhar. She's with the oral health section, the Bureau of Community Health Services, and the Ohio Department of Health. We have Joe on Facebook. He writes, Columbus Neighborhood Health Centers are a great resource. They have a sliding fee scale for medical, dental, and optometric care. Carrie Farquhar, to what extent do clinics like that take care of the problem in Ohio?
It's hard to measure the exact extent. There are about 100, we call them dental safety net clinics in Ohio, and they vary in size. They can be operated by local health departments, hospitals, federally qualified health centers, nonprofit agencies. The Ohio Department of Health funds 20 of those 100. They vary in capacity, too. Some have multiple chairs, as many as, well, Dr. Amini has, I don't know, 12, 15 chairs, quite a few chairs.
17.
17, there you go. And some may have one or two chairs and only operate 1 or 2 days a month. So the capacity varies. And I'm glad your caller referred to the Columbus Neighborhood Health Services. They have 3 facilities here in Columbus: Parsons Avenue, West Side Dental on West Broad Street, and East Side Dental on Main Street. In addition, the Ohio State University College of Dentistry provides lower fee care, and they also have a mobile unit that provides care to children in the schools. There are several resources. There are a couple of free clinics, Doe Baptist and Vineyard, primarily extractions, and then there are special programs that focus on children with special health care needs, Faith Mission for the homeless, those kinds of programs.
Are we doing enough, Carrie Farquhar, to educate people to start turning? Now, you said things are better, but is it because of education or is it because there's more access and you're finally addressing that part of the equation?
Things are better, but there's still a long ways to go. They're not ideal. And it's a good question because it's a very complex issue. There are a lot of factors involved to the problem with access to dental care for lower-income families and uninsured. And part of it is the Medicaid reimbursement, the dentist's willingness. In Ohio, 30% of the dentists are enrolled in Medicaid, and only about half of those are what we call significant providers.
Regular,
they bill Medicaid for 250 or more unduplicated patients in a year. So it's a very small percentage. So that's part of the problem is we don't have enough providers. We have programs such as the dental safety nets, but they have long waiting lists. We have a dental options program. It's a partnership between the Ohio Dental Association and the Department of Health. We have funded it for 15 years. Volunteer dentists will see uninsured patients in their offices and discount their fees significantly. But in many counties, we have long waiting lists. So a lot of it's capacity.
Dr. Amini, to what extent do your folks work on educating parents when they do bring their children in? Is it an opportunity for you?
We have actually multiple programs, and we're part of a collaborative that is of trying to address the early childhood caries through what you call disease management. You know, you can drill and fill and take care of the cavities, but if you really do not address the root of the problem, the kid is going to come back again, more cavities. So we spend a lot of time with our parents and also new moms-to-be to educate them about the importance of oral health, give them basic tips what to do and what not to do. For example, do not put your baby to bed with a bottle containing juice or milk. So a lot of education goes on with them and trying to work on hands-on to prevent caries. There used to be a time that they would recommend the first dental visit to be age 3, but I want to inform everyone that the recommendation has changed, and you really need to start early. Every child needs to have a dental assessment by age 1, and at that time, the exam part is very quick and basic, but we spend a lot of time educating the parents and talking about how to prevent the caries, and we do implement some preventive measures like fluoride varnish application. So at Nationwide, we are trying to do our best, trying to take care of the root of the problem at the same time that you're addressing the restorative needs.
Carrie Farquhar?
Yes. In addition, besides educating the families, we're educating other health professionals. We're educating physicians, pediatricians about the importance of oral health because they're the ones that are seeing the children when they're 1 year old, not the dentist. And so we're working more and more with physicians to help them be more comfortable looking in the child's mouth, looking at the teeth, doing an oral assessment, providing that anticipatory guidance, that education to the families, and making referrals to dentists when they see problems.
Well, that's an interesting point. Dr. Amini, how many of your patients in the clinic are referrals from the hospital itself?
We do have a good relationship with all our departments, and we have, I'd want to say more than 5-7 years ago, we provided training for all our pediatricians to refer patients when they see an active caries. And we also have our relationship with other departments in the hospital that they refer whenever there is a dental need. For example, all of our in-house patients who are going under cancer treatment, they all need to have a referral for dental evaluation. But again, working with our pediatrician has been a primary objective for us, and they're good as far as referral. We do have an infant oral health clinic, or we call it a baby clinic, and it's basically for kids up to age 3.5. And most of the patients that come in are referrals from our pediatricians.
We have an email from Ben. He writes, I have a very limited income since I lost my job. Medical and dental insurance is not affordable for me at this time. I was recently turned away from a free clinic because I am single and have no children. With that being said, I just don't know where to go. I'm in need of dental work and wisdom teeth extraction. Where can I turn to get help on this matter? I'm trying to find employment with the city or state just because of their benefits package. At this time, I'm just lost and need some direction. Carrie Farquhar?
That's a common problem. We actually get, I asked our secretary, 10 to 15 calls a week similar to this call. And I wish we had more resources and better resources. The first thing I would do is go to a website that we've developed. It's www.ohiodentalclinics.com. It's actually a website that was developed for the dental clinics, but in addition, we have a vehicle through which people can go and enter in the city they live in or the county, and they can find dental clinics that are closest to them. Additionally, I did make reference earlier to the Dental Options Program. In some areas, there are more providers, and it works better. In some areas, we struggle more because we don't have enough providers. We don't have enough dentists enrolled. There are 950 dentists participating, but that's only about 15% of Ohio dentists. But he could call their toll-free number, 1-888-765-6789, and see if he qualifies for the Dental Options Program.
Okay, Ben, thanks for that email. We'll post the OhioDentalClinics.com on our website and also the number, 888-765-6789. If you don't have time to jot it down, that'll be on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Dr. Homa Amini, what are the most common problems you're seeing in the children outside of just the maintenance type of care?
So tooth decay is the most common chronic disease of childhood, basically cavities. And it's on the rise in a younger age group. Carrie mentioned that actually the rate of tooth decay is decreasing in the population in general, and that is correct. In our teenagers, we see a decrease. But when you look at the specific age of 2 to 4, that has not happened, and we still see a lot of early childhood caries, tooth decay in that age group, and that's what we see most of the time. We treat trauma cases at our hospital, but the main bulk of our care is, again, managing the disease and the tooth decay that we see in that young population.
And one more question. To what extent does Nationwide acknowledge there's a transportation problem that people just can't get there?
So our hospital works with patients who have difficulty with transportation. We have social workers who are able to assist with providing transportation vouchers, and we have case managers who actually work with some of our counties to help with that. So if there is an issue for transportation, our hospital has some capabilities with assisting with transportation to make sure the child gets to our clinic so we can take care of their needs.
Dr. Homa Amini, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Dr. Homa Amini, she's chief of the pediatric dentistry section at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Also with us, Carrie Farquhar. Carrie, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Carrie is the administrator for the oral health section in the Bureau of Community Health Services at the Ohio Department of Health. Coming up, we're going to hear about other ideas for the state of Ohio from the Ohio Dental Association and also UCAN Ohio. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Peter McBride grew up on a ranch along the Colorado River, but no matter where you live, he says, the river likely affects you and the food you eat.
It is really the lifeblood. They call it the American Nile.
I'm Neil Conan, the long reach of the Colorado River. We're at the Aspen Institute, next Talk of the Nation, from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation is this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 70 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today, warming up to a high near 80. Clear skies tonight, a low of 54. Sunny and warmer on Wednesday with a high of 88 degrees.
Support for 89.7 comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly. On newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
And stay right here in 20 minutes. Hour two of All Sides begins, and it's Tech Tuesday, a discussion of computer repair services, Windows 8 phones, gadgets, and more. That's Tech Tuesday from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. And if you contributed to our station this year, thank you. Our fiscal year ends on June 30th, and we're close to our goal, but we still need to hear from you. You can give right now at WOSU.org. Thanks for supporting 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Information about how Montgomery & Associates can help you achieve your financial goals is at themontgomerysolution.com.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The U.S. dental health system is broken, but who's going to fix it? Alternative and affordable options for dental care are out there, but are they enough to assist the more than 100 million Americans without access or ability to pay? What options are there in Franklin County for affordable dental care? Joining us to talk about these issues is David Mayware. He's project director for the Dental Access Now. It's a program of the Universal Healthcare Action Network of Ohio. Welcome to the show, David Mayware.
Thank you, Anne, for having me.
Also joining us to talk about these issues is David Aushwani. He is executive director of the Ohio Dental Association. Welcome to the show, David. I hope I pronounced your last name correctly.
Close enough.
Okay.
Thank you, Ann.
If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I guess we can just get to it. We were talking earlier in the hour about in Alaska and now Minnesota, they've started to certify what are known as dental therapist counterparts to nurse practitioners, for example. They do the basic work of a dentist. UCAN advocates a similar model for Ohio. David Mayware, what sort of model are you advocating for Ohio?
Well, let's back up just a second. I want to reinforce a couple things that were said earlier this morning, and that is that too many Ohioans just can't get affordable dental care in their communities, and the problem's just getting worse. And as a result, too many Ohioans live in pain, miss school or work, and even develop life-threatening infections. Tooth decay is the most common chronic childhood disease, even more common than asthma. So we know what the numbers are saying to us. The Columbus Dispatch this week printed an article that talks about the same thing, dentists trying to fill care gap and long lines where people are waiting to get care. So we know that there is a problem in the state of Ohio. Mm-hmm. The numbers are real, and they're reinforced by, as Carrie said earlier, the Family Health Survey, which for the last two rounds indicated that the public is now telling us that access to dental care is the number one health care problem in Ohio. Recently, UCAN Ohio went on a listening tour and listened to the folks who are actually suffering from these kinds of problems. And I heard stories about people who were extracting their own teeth, people who were just who had been working in the workforce, lost their job, lost their insurance, and the relationship to their dentist just eroded. And they're now living without any kind of means of taking care of their own teeth. And so we think there are a variety of ways that we can address the problem, because it's a very complex one. It includes a whole number of things, as well as workforce development. Includes better reimbursement rates for dentists and de-bureaucratizing the Medicaid system. It also includes making sure that, as Amini said earlier, that parents know that they have to be part of the education process. We know that oral health is directly related to overall health, and in order to make sure that your body is healthy, your mouth has to be healthy too. And then we get into the workforce issues. So there are a couple things that we think are important. One of them is that we already have a trained workforce in our dental hygienists who should be able to work up to the full maximum load of their training and their education. So we'd actually like to see dental hygienists under the general supervision of the dentist. Then The next level that you talked about, Anne, is bringing a new level of worker into the dental team. In other places, that person is known as the dental therapist. Here in Ohio, we're recommending that the person be called a registered dental practitioner. And if you'd like, I can talk to you about the education that's required and the supervision.
Let's talk first about the controversy about it. Not everybody agrees, the Ohio Dental Association among them, that this is a good idea. David Ashwani from the Ohio Dental Association, what are your objections to something? And again, I liken it to like a nurse practitioner, and there were arguments over that for many, many years in the Ohio General Assembly.
Sure. First, I one of the things that Miles O'Brien said, and I think he called them fundamental geographic problems in Alaska, where you couldn't get dentists into remote villages because the only access there was by seaplane or dog sled. You know, there are some very remote areas in Alaska. We don't have those in Ohio. So our focus in Ohio has been to encourage dentists, create incentives to get dental care into underserved areas. And we think we're having some success. As Carrie Farquhar mentioned, the most recent survey indicates that Ohio's children with untreated cavities has declined precipitously since the last survey. And the prevalence of dental sealants, those are the most effective means of preventing tooth decay, are up substantially. Nearly 50% of Ohio kids now have sealants. That's a positive development. Overall, about 80% of children reportedly had a dental visit during the past year. So what we need to do is get dentists into the 20% that have not had the dental visit. So our focus has been on not lowering the standard of care by creating a different level of provider, but getting the existing dental team, which provides high-quality care, to those who don't have access to care.
Can I address the lower standard of care?
David Maywar? Maywar,
yeah.
From the UCAN, Ohio, yes.
David knows better than that. Dr. Mary Willard, who is a native of Bexley and a graduate of the Ohio State University College of Dentistry, trains the dental therapists in Alaska. The training is rigorous. It's 3,000 hours of classroom training and clinical training, where the trainees see over 100 patients under the direct supervision of the dentist. They then go through a 400-hour residency, and that doesn't happen with dentists. They go through a recertification every 2 years of every procedure that they're allowed to do, and the procedures are very limited. They are limited to drillings and fillings and some extractions. Now, we need to do away with the notion that the people who would come from our educational facilities in this state are going to come out untrained. And the second notion we need to do away with is that they're going to come out unsupervised, because they're going to be supervised by our dentists, by Ohio dentists. Now, I don't know about you, but I believe that our education system is a good one. It produces fine dentists and it produces fine dental hygienists. And the people who would be coming out of those kinds of educational facilities are not going to be untrained and they're not going to be unsupervised.
David Ashwani from the Ohio Dental Association, is in places like Appalachia, Ohio does have a region, a very special region, that is extremely underserved. Wouldn't, even though most of Ohio is very populous, lots of big cities, isn't there a need for something like this maybe in Appalachia?
Yeah, you suggested earlier, you asked Carrie whether there was a shortage of dentists. I think most of the statistics show it's not a shortage of dentists.
Right.
It's a geographic maldistribution.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't enough dentists in those communities, and that's why we're focusing on solutions to get dentists into Appalachian communities. One of the most interesting developments in the last 20 years has been the use of dental coaches. Those dental buses, if you've ever been on one, they have full operatories on them, and so we have been supporting programs that have dental coaches that go into schools in Appalachia and have those kids see a dentist. We also advocated for a law a few years ago that created the Dentist Loan Repayment Program. It's entirely funded by a surcharge on dentist license fee. Dentists voluntarily agreed to increase their license fee, and that money went specifically to the Ohio Dentist Loan Repayment Program, and that has created incentives for 17 dentists who graduate from dental school with a significant amount of debt load to provide care in those underserved Appalachian counties. So are 17 new dentists in those communities enough? No. But we're making progress toward that without changing the dental delivery team.
Mike and at OSU, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Thank you.
What's your question?
First, I want to just comment on my my background. I'm here at Ohio State University. I'm actually a second-year dental student entering into my third year at the College of Dentistry. And in 4 days, actually, from right now, I will take my National Board Examination Part 1, which covers the first 2 years of education that we've had here at the university. And my question is regarding mid-level providers. And the proposed program by UCAN is to give them 2 years of education and let them go into the population and practice. Me being someone who's been here for 2 years studying extensively physiology, anatomy, pathology, among other topics, along with dental procedures, I've put in 10 to 12-hour days for weeks on end and sacrificed a lot to get there, and I still, as a second-year dental student going into my third year, do not feel prepared to, on my own, practice irreversible surgical procedures on a patient. And I would like to just, you know why we think that mid-level provider would be more suited than me, who's also had a bachelor's degree. I'm a dual degree student in an MBA program and a DDS program.
Let's hear. David Mayweir, what exactly are you thinking about when you talk about dental therapists? What's the goal with them? Would they be doing major surgeries?
Well, the use of the term major surgery is one way that that organized dentistry kind of distracts from what's being done. They call what they do surgery, and that's fine. The people that we're talking about end up having more than 2 years of training. If you look at the American Public Health Dentist's recommended curriculum, you'll see the extensive nature of the training and then the supervision that goes into working with the individuals. The other thing about the point that Mike just made is that in order to make it through this whole process, in every step of the education, the individuals are being directly supervised by a dentist. They're not going to go into the field until one of our licensed and Ohio licensed dentists says, yes, you are ready to be able to perform the procedures that you've been trained to do. So no one's going to go into the field untrained, and the people who go into the field are going to be supervised. And they'll be supervised by dentists who have gone through our own licensing standards. So In the working relationship, what happens is that the dentist works out a set of standing orders with the dental therapist, and that standing orders sets the types of procedures that the individual is allowed to do. If they have not performed competently on an extraction or on a drilling or a filling, that does not go under their standing orders. So they're always under the supervision of a dentist.
Thank you, Mike, for that call. We've got some more calls, Mike, I want to get to. I appreciate yours. 614-292-8513 if you do want to make that call. David Aushwani from the Ohio Dental Association, aside from the issue of dental therapists, what does the ODA recommend to deal with this, regardless of the decrease in demand? It's marginal at best. What is the ODA doing to deal with this? The Medicaid payments aren't enough for most dentists. What can we do?
Right. Thank you for asking that question, Ann. Sometimes we spend so much time on what I think is a relatively ancillary issue with the dental therapist that we forget about some of the other proven solutions from other states. Water fluoridation is perhaps the most significant public health development of the last 100 years, according to the CDC. And so continued efforts to fluoridate water systems to ensure that, especially in underserved areas where kids may not have access to fluoride toothpaste, regular dental care, fluoride water can significantly reduce dental disease. And it's important to note, organized dentistry was behind the fluoridation of water systems for the last 30 years. That is something that some would say, well, that's inconsistent with your interest because that means you have less dental disease to treat. But this profession, the dental profession, is committed to improving oral health, and so they have promoted water fluoridation. We also know that the vast majority of dental disease is preventable. So one of the things the ODA is doing and organized dentistry nationally is doing is we're kicking off a public awareness campaign specifically targeted in underserved areas to help educate low-income Ohioans and underserved Ohioans so that they understand how to brush their teeth, how to floss their teeth, to stay away from sugary cereals and pop. And if we can get to them and get that education to parents at an early age, their kids are at an early age, we can help prevent this disease altogether so we don't have to worry about who's doing the drilling and filling. We also need to fix Medicaid. Medicaid reimbursements in Ohio are less than 40 cents on the dollar. A dentist's typical overhead is about 65%. So it's hard to make ends meet if we don't fix the Medicaid program. There was a proposal a few years back to eliminate coverage for adults in the dental Medicaid program. We made the case that not only is that bad for overall health and oral health, but adults will end up having to present in hospital emergency rooms, and it will cost the state more.
And they won't get treated anyway.
To the credit of the leadership in the General Assembly and Governor Kasich, they maintain coverage for adults in the dental Medicaid program. There are fewer and fewer states doing that, and so that is why some of the data is showing we're making some improvement in Ohio. Are we perfect in Ohio? No, but we're headed in the right direction.
What about those for-profit operations that target low-income children and adults?
My feeling and the ODA's feeling is that's a marketplace reality that is likely to come. As long as they are meeting the same standards from the Ohio State Dental Board as far as licensure, quality of care, we welcome them. And to the extent that they can provide quality care and help address the access to care program, we don't have a problem with that. One of the problems you do run into with the corporate model, though, is there's usually a significant amount of turnover with dentists, and so patients don't develop that comfort level. You know, having someone in your face, in your mouth with a high-speed drill, that's a trusting relationship, and some patients are a little bit uncomfortable in those corporate settings because they're not seeing the same dentist that they've built that trust relationship with. So it's really up to the patient to make an informed decision on what he or she expects for their dental care.
David Mayweather, we're running out of time. I'll let you have the last word.
Well, I think that we can fill the gap in Ohio. We can fill the provider gap in Ohio by doing many of the things that David has suggested, and also by taking a look at the workforce and bringing us up to date in terms of who we have in the field.
Thanks so much for joining us, David Mayweather. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ann.
David Mayweather, he is Project Director for Dental Access Now with UCAN Ohio. We'll have a link to that operation on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Also with us, David Ashwani, Executive Director of the Ohio Dental Association. David, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Ann.
If you want to listen back to today's shows and every show by visiting WOSU.org/allsides, you can explore our archive. You can find more information, links, and audio and video of every show. You can also be sure to like us, All Sides with Ann Fisher, on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at Ann Fisher, WOSU. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.